Obviously, people remember the Aleppo moment.
Sure.
How do you feel about it?
Well, it was going to happen. I would hypothesize that it happened to Trump about 150 mm-hmm. times.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay, it happens to me. Well, what do you do when something like that happens? Well, they each had $1.8 billion. So when it came to Goffs, they had the firepower to come back. Now,
can I just ask, you mean gaffes, right? Not Goffs.
Well, thank you.
Hi, this is Nick Gillespie with Reason, and today we are talking with two-term governor of New Mexico and two-time Libertarian Party presidential candidate, Gary Johnson. Governor Johnson, thanks for talking.
Nick, appreciate you doing this.
So you are in D.C., and we're talking before you go talk at CPAC, the annual convention of conservative action people in D.C. Why are you speaking at CPAC?
Well, I think it's an opportunity to give a libertarian perspective on things. Now, I'm going to be on a panel when it comes to economics and tax policy. So that is a Trump plus, the reduction of taxes.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask, what do you think about Trump so far? I mean, you ran against Trump and you did historically well for a Libertarian Party candidate, against Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Trump's been in office over a year. What is your evaluation?
Well, he has not told the truth. Building a wall across the border is crazy. Now, he did say he was going to build a wall across the border, but said he wasn't going to involve himself in states' rights,
right,
or he was going to stand up for states' rights. And here we have Jeff Sessions that has come out very vocally against marijuana. Ultimately, that may lead to legislation that will not make marijuana a class one narcotic, which is really
a good thing. So those are two things, though, where Trump's bluster or his bark is worse. He's got a lot of bark but no bite, because we haven't actually started building the border wall. And Sessions is saying, I'm going to, let's start looking at these states that have legalized marijuana, but nothing has happened yet.
Nothing has happened. And it, like I say, it may lead to legislation on the Dreamers.
Right.
Here it is. We may have legislation that clears all this up, but his rhetoric
is
horrible.
Are you looking for a position in his cabinet, which seems to be emptying out? But no,
no.
I mean, so these are, so you're saying, I mean, in a weird way, Trump is actually delivering the opposite of what he promised. There's no wall. We may get the Dreamers may be legalized, and pot may be descheduled or rescheduled.
But that isn't something that he's advocating.
Right.
But as a consequence of what he's doing, that may actually happen.
You mentioned, on economics or on tax policy, he and the Republicans put through a major tax plan. Do you like that tax plan? And how does it stack up to what you were arguing for on the campaign
trail? Well, that corporate tax rates lower to 20%, that's a positive. I was advocating zero corporate tax, which I think would be amazing. And individuals, that we would do away with income tax, that we would abolish the IRS. I just think that that would have an enormous positive impact on all of our lives, including being able to fund government.
And that would have been replaced by essentially a national sales tax.
Well, in what I advocated was that we switch then to a consumption tax, and I held up the fair tax as a model for how you would or could accomplish that.
And certainly Trump's or the Republican tax reform, whatever else you can say about it, it really does build in bigger and bigger deficits, and it doesn't simplify things very
much. And that's the half. What about spending? I mean, that's the, if you want to hold an optimism for Trump in the future, is that he would actually at some point address spending, but he hasn't. Spending has, as you know, increased. So what difference does it make whether it's a Democrat or a Republican? And that's where I come in, is
how about
a libertarian?
What about regulation? Do you think Trump has been good? I mean,
absolutely.
And particularly
as
a Western state governor, he's kind of pulled back the EPA a little bit. Is that talk in relation to both what Trump has done, but also your experience as a Western state governor with what New Mexico has, like, basically more federal lands than as a percentage of its mass than almost any other state, right?
Well, the Western states have that phenomenon. Yeah. And west of the... So here it is, Washington, D.C. East of the Mississippi, there is absolutely no comprehension whatsoever of what public lands actually are. Well, west of the Mississippi, you've got all these public lands, and they pass laws regarding public lands, like access to public lands, which you and I, we look at that and we think, well, yeah, you should have access to public lands. Well, it's not even possible to have access to, because they're laid out in checkerboard fashion. Leaving those decisions to the states, the deregulation, if you will, getting the federal government off the backs of states that are well-meaning, yeah, you bet. That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
And what about at the FDA? Trump, his appointee seems to have pulled back from some of the overregulation of medical devices and of pharmaceuticals.
All positive. Companies are not going to be able to sell products that are dangerous to the public because there are attorneys out there. And I think attorneys do a much better job of policing than the federal government does.
But then you also mentioned
But here it is. Yeah. Trump has this press conference where I am going to challenge the pharmaceutical industry to come up with a non-addictive substitute for opioids. Hello? What about cannabis? Marijuana? Come on. So there's a deafness that exists, but all of this deregulation that is in fact happening, and I only guess at this because I don't know the specifics, but I wish that he would articulate what he's doing and why. That, I think, is a very important part of governing.
Yeah, talk about, you mentioned his rhetoric as being, awful and divisive. How does his failure to kind of articulate either larger principles when it comes to deregulation or, on that level, he seems to be mostly silent. He deregulates stuff but doesn't explain why it's good. But then when it comes to things like immigration, he's over the top in, people coming from shithole countries, blah, blah, blah. How does his rhetoric influence your views of him?
Well, that they influence my views on him in a very negative way. Gosh, the getting elected president of the United States, come on, we all recognize that he has an agenda and saw that up front. Well, how about telling us why there are benefits to this? Now, when it comes to immigration, when it comes to marriage equality, woman's right to choose, I don't buy into his arguments at all. But at least he perhaps tries arguing those points. The deregulation part, the getting into the weeds policy-wise, that was, I kind of found that interesting as governor of New Mexico. And yes, I think I did I think I turned the whole system on its head, but I was upfront about everything it was that I was doing. So my legacy is, I didn't necessarily agree with anything Gary Johnson did, but you know what? He had reasons for it, and we understood what those reasons were.
Do you think Trump overall is better than Hillary Clinton would have been as president?
I think we would have kind of a myriad of other issues with Hillary that would probably be equally as bad. And that was something that I said during the election. So one or the other, and it would have been horrible. I think it would be horrible if Hillary would have been president, but I think Trump's got his horrible also.
As somebody who was involved in the 2016 presidential campaign, do you have any take on whether or not Russian agents of influence were screwing around with you or with the... with vote totals, that seems to be a lingering shadow.
It's not okay for the Russians to do it, but it's okay for Hillary Clinton to do it. There was an article that appeared. Let me speak to you about what happened to me. Not that you're not aware. About 6 weeks to go in the campaign, the New York Times comes out with an article that says, "Watch out, Hillary. Johnson is garnering more millennial support than you are." That was on a Friday. On a Saturday, 200 200 internet trolls descended on MySpace. Mm. And now you had 20 news organizations, call it fake news if you want, but you had 20 pop-ups that appeared, here's what Gary Johnson has said. Mm-hmm. And if you read any of them, you probably read a few, your takeaway was that this is the dumbest guy that's ever walked the planet. And at that point, I stopped Googling myself. And to this day, I don't Google myself. I don't look at what people are saying about me.
Do you assume that was Russian bots or was that Hillary Clinton people?
There were articles written that Hillary Clinton spent $50 million to discredit me. Hmm. Now, was it $50 million? Well, we spent $12 million on our campaign. That's what we raised. So did it affect the election? Did it affect me? Well, like I say, Google me today and your takeaway is going to be, it's good we didn't have that guy.
So it's, I mean, what you're saying is that, or if I may, are you saying that the question of Russian influence is less important than the ways in which people were, everybody was trying
manipulate this. And when it comes to the internet, I mean, mm-hmm. you pay for those, where does your website pop up? Mm-hmm. Well, if you're talking about $50 million, the first 20 things you're going to read are going to be potentially subsidized by that $20 million. When it comes to the Russian influence, I just read where they, among other things, just promoted Bernie Sanders. Well, that would have been a negative for Hillary Clinton.
But she also was bringing her own kind of baggage to the party, right?
Sure.
But let me ask you, if it was a question of Hillary Clinton being able to say, okay, flying monkeys, go destroy Gary Johnson. Here's $50 million. Here's $20 million. Would that mean that you would want to limit the ways in which people can spend their campaign money?
No, but it is so back to policy, mm-hmm. back to getting elected, being in office. What potentially could be done to fix that? Nick, I can't tell you what potentially could be done to fix that, but there are ideas out there, and certainly the best ideas launched would be, in this case, Facebook themselves, Twitter themselves dealing with this. But looking at government, and even as a libertarian, look, a takeaway from reading Hayek is if you're an elected official, if you're in the public policy arena, you should always be looking to improve things. Hmm. Always improve things. So that, having been governor of New Mexico, that was always my tact.
What, to stay on the 2016 campaign a bit, obviously people remember the Aleppo moment.
Sure.
How do you feel about that now? It's been a while and it's in the rearview mirror. Were there moments, was that a turning point, do you think, in your campaign? How do you feel about it?
Well, it was going to happen. I would hypothesize that it happened to Trump about 150 mm-hmm. times.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay, it happens to me. Well, what do you do when something like that happens? Well, we had they each had $1.8 billion. So when it came to Goffs, they had the firepower to come back.
Can I just ask, you mean gaffes, right? Not Goffs.
Well, thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
This is a gaffe. Right. This is real time deconstruction. Yeah, right. Okay. Right, so, but right. Yeah, I mean, it's
so Goff. I yeah, said Goff. Yeah, well, see, now that go, there, yeah. there we go. You know, that could be a testament to my intellect right there.
Yeah. But it's basically they were able to bounce back. And it is what.
So for us, immediately within days of that, I did a major foreign policy speech in Chicago. And guess what? Nobody carried it. Well, our firepower was very limited.
Yeah.
But we did all the right things. And it was going to happen. Gaffes happen.
Yeah.
I always thought that honesty would rule the day. I always thought that integrity would rule the day. I always thought that telling the truth would rule the day.
Do you,
and it doesn't.
Do you hate America now?
I don't hate America. I hate politics.
Do you hate Americans?
I hate politics. I think political office today is toxic.
So are you, here you are, it's whatever it is, February, late February, early March of 2018, you're speaking at CPAC. Are you thinking about running again
no.
in the future?
No.
Absolutely not.
No, okay. I'm done. I'm done with elected political office. But my political arm, Our America, we're going to dedicate ourselves to, well, how do you change this? And don't you have to vote for another party to change this? And so libertarians, I think, really have an opportunity here. And the opportunity rests solely in having really good candidates and having some really good candidates win.
Yeah. And the Our America Initiative is your nonprofit that looks at a variety of policy issues. And is it affiliated with the Libertarian Party, or you were a two-term governor as a Republican, you renounced your Republicanness, or your membership, are you still fully enmeshed in the Libertarian Party, or how do you think about party politics?
Well, by enmeshed, I do think that the Libertarian Party emulates the feelings of most Americans, and I summarized that during the 2016 election by saying most Americans, I think, are fiscally conservative and socially, they don't care. They're socially liberal. You should be able to make decisions in your own life as long as those decisions don't adversely affect others. I think most people feel that way. The Republican Party doesn't emulate that, and the Democrat Party certainly doesn't emulate that either when it comes to dollars and cents.
When
neither of them do when it comes to dollars and cents right now.
Right, and foreign policy too. They seem to be pretty similar, right?
It's all lockstep. And, the Constitution, the Founding Fathers, they never visualized or never believed that there would be political parties. And if there were going to be political parties, that might be the demise of our republic.
In terms of foreign policy in the presidential kind of mess of issues or mass of issues, obviously terrorism bothers people in a way, but did you find that people, were they responsive to your vision of a non-interventionist foreign policy or of having a Defense Department as opposed to a War Department?
No, they weren't. I think everybody, and that's the fear, that politics really are people running for office that, look, drugs are the scourge of the earth. Terrorism is the scourge of the earth. Afghanistan is the scourge of the earth. Iran is the scourge of the earth. Elect me and I will protect you from all of these threats and evils. And that's what politics is, and I've never been a part of that.
Well, one of the things you used to say a lot during the campaign was Google Gary Johnson. You're no longer doing that, you said, but you also used to say Uber everything. Get Uber for everything. Do you still believe in that?
And yes.
Do you think, will that carry America forward in progress?
I absolutely believe that whatever it is that you do in your life, if you can directly deal with the end user and get paid such, that's a good thing. And I look at Uber as a model for that. You've got drivers that own their own cars, and I realize that's in not all the cases,
right.
And maybe it is, but you own your own cars, you're your own boss, you can do what you want, you give a piece to Uber because they've arranged to do all this. Well, that could be a model for plumbers, that could be a model for lawyers, that could be a model for you name it. I do ultimately think that that's the way things are going to evolve. Eliminate the middleman. Let me get paid the $75 an hour instead of getting paid $25 an hour. And now we raise all sorts of liability issues, but insurance can change that a person becomes insured from a liability standpoint to be able to do anything. If you did away with income tax, holy cow, you could go help your neighbor and get paid to help your neighbor. Your neighbor needs help moving some boxes. Hey, I'll pay you $20 to do that. Well, today, if you take that $20, you're technically in violation of the law because you're not going to claim that as income.
One of the issues that is was particularly front and center to you was drug legalization, particularly pot legal or the end of pot prohibition, marijuana prohibition. You're involved with some marijuana companies. What's going on in that area of your life, your business life?
Well, currently I'm involved with CB1, which you know they do have a website, but it's a hedge fund buying stock of publicly traded companies in the marijuana space. Very exciting. And I do believe that it could be one of the biggest investment opportunities in the next decade. Because 65% of Americans now support legalizing marijuana. Maybe it's not 65, but it's the highest that it's ever been before. It's going to happen. And it's a positive. I mean, and I say a positive because the alternatives from a medical standpoint, opioids, replacement for opioids. And on the alcohol front, I haven't had a drink of alcohol in 30 years. I do use marijuana occasionally, but it's much, much safer.
You would drink and you would get drunk, right?
I would drink, and why have one beer when you could have three and catch a buzz?
Yeah.
And then three beers the next morning really had an effect. For me, anyway. Yeah. For me. I have no problem with anybody drinking as long as they're not doing harm to others.
But then, so with pot, what does pot do for you that's better than drinking? And I, you know, I understand there's the large arguments, which I mostly agree with to the extent that I'm aware of them, that pot is less dangerous, it screws up your mind less, it doesn't hurt
for
your
me,
liver, you know, you don't have to smoke it anymore, but do you get high when you take, when you use pot?
Well, I do, and I've always said that it kind of, it's a mind Rolf.
Okay, Rolfing. You know,
Rolfing.
Now we're going back to a 70s
Rolfing. Kind of a brain Rolf, if you will. Rearrange the bookshelves in a good way, not a bad way. So that's my experience.
Yeah.
And for anybody that has problems with substances, and really there's a very small amount of people that do have problems with marijuana, you know, that's going to always exist.
What was, you know, it, and you see pot or marijuana-derived products as one possible way of lessening the reliance on opioids, whether we're talking about heroin or we're talking about prescription drugs that get misused. Yeah. When you were governor of New Mexico, what were the drugs that you were most often dealing with? That were causing real social harms, not simply because of their status as black market.
Well, there's the perception and there's the reality. And the perception was that when I was governor of New Mexico, that drugs were the scourge of the earth. Well, and including marijuana. Well, the reality, and I'm governor of New Mexico. Reality: half of what we spend on law enforcement, half of what we spend on the courts, and half of what we spend in the prisons is drug related. Do you know that in 2017, the number one arrest offense in the United States is still marijuana? And I'll bet that's the case in 2018. So with all this talk about legalization, that is still the fact. And it's wrong. It's wrong to criminalize an activity that, like I say, you're not doing any harm to anyone arguably other than yourself. Should that be an arrestable offense? I don't believe so.
Well, can you sketch out the scenario as you see it, where pot is now kind of, I mean, it is legal at the state level in a handful of states, and Massachusetts is actually going to join the pot club, the marijuana club, later this year with recreational legalization. It's, you know, in dozens of states, it is medical marijuana is legal. What happens next? Because there is going to be a showdown, isn't there, between the federal government or federal laws and state level
laws? The one thing that the federal government needs to do is to deschedule marijuana as a class one narcotic alongside of heroin. Give me a break. So there is all this conjecture, there is all this hypothesis of what are the benefits of marijuana? Well, Nick, there's no research happening in the United States. It's happening in other countries. But the research needs to take place and will take place if marijuana is descheduled as a class one narcotic. So very simple step for the federal government. Declassify marijuana. The President of the United States could order the could order the Surgeon General to do that.
We're a week or so after a particularly disturbing mass shooting. I guess to say one is less, you know, more disturbing than the other, were is wrong. 17 people were killed at a school in Florida. Did you have to deal with that kind of and how do you deal with that as a governor or as a chief executive and? Is there a good solution to this type of violence?
What I said numerous times during the presidential campaign and as governor, look, we need to be open to a discussion on how you keep guns out of the hands of mentally ill individuals. To say anything other than that would be stupid. So an open mind on how do we deal with this? But Nick, I have not heard any suggestions that would actually bring about real change. President Trump saying that we should arm teachers. As governor of New Mexico, after Columbine, I was asked, what do you do to prevent a further Columbine? And my answer was, look, you're not going to want to hear the answer, but you would lessen the impact of any shooter, active shooter, by requiring that teachers be armed. And I'm not advocating that, but yesterday now, or this morning, I read that 75% of teachers don't want to be armed. That means that 25% would actually arm themselves if allowed to do that. Wouldn't that, and again, I'm not saying this is the solution, but here is a concrete way of deterring these things from happening, these active shootings from happening in the future. If 25% of teachers are carrying, to me, that would be a deterrent to a lot of, I think it would be a deterrent. Maybe it doesn't turn out that way, but I have to feel, forget about the actual crossfire that would occur. Forget about an actual gunfight that's going to occur. Think about the fact that, well, gee, I'm not going to do the school thing anymore people that contemplate this kind of thing aren't going to think of schools anymore because I'm going to end up dead. And many of them don't care anyway. So that's why it's not a solution to it, but it certainly would have to be a deterrent.
Do you, you know, in a broader sense, do you feel like even since the 2006 campaign, has the ability of America to kind of have these conversations, is it growing or is it shrinking? Is it staying the same? Is it always a struggle? I mean, because in a lot of ways,
maybe it is growing. Maybe it is growing because looking at the outrage over Sessions and what he's saying regarding marijuana. Well, because of what he's doing when it comes to marijuana, which is wanting to crack down on marijuana. In fact, it may turn out to be the opposite. May turn out right to be that way.
Well, you know, let's end on this now. One of the things that I found genuinely interesting, apart from, you know, generally agreeing with your policy positions, it was your demeanor as a politician to say, like, honesty, let's talk about this stuff. You're also a baby boomer, right? What year were you born?
Yeah, 53.
Okay, so you're about 10 years younger, I guess, or 6 or 7 years younger than Trump or Hillary, all of that kind of, you know, Bernie Sanders. These were early baby boomers, and they were all incredibly negative and cynical about America. I mean, Trump talked about American carnage in his inauguration speech. Hillary Clinton was talking about how everything was kind of going to hell in a handbasket. Bernie Sanders is, you know, like, I mean, he lived in a world that was, you know, like out of a Little Rascals short or something, you know, like Hoovervilles in black and white, right? You were optimistic. What undergirded your optimism, and what, you know, what keeps it going in the face of situations where, you know, people are saying, oh, my God, they're killing kids. You know, the economy's in the crapper. You know, China's taking over.
One of the offshoots of Trump and all really hasn't happened, but the talk of cutting back and entitlements need to be reformed, which Trump isn't touching. But because of his rhetoric, I think now, for example, we're seeing companies step up and actually doing more. There's more of a seems to me today that there's more of a corporate responsibility that's rising to the top. Well, that's the private sector that's rising to the top. So I remain optimistic. And if government weren't there to provide all the services that it provides, we as Americans would be filling in that gap. We would be filling it in completely. I'm completely in that belief.
And we would be buzzed on top of it.
We would be happy. By buzz, yeah. So we would be buzzed.
Okay, so it could be a natural high, or it could be an artificial high, but we'd be in a better place. When government yields
and
freedom,
and I'm Uber everything, so I'm making a whole lot more money. I'm able to do things that I haven't been able to do before because I'm making more money. One of the things that Trump said is that by repatriating, which I believe, if we would repatriate all that corporate money that's overseas, that we would see that money invested in the United States. Well, it's happened. So that's another positive on the Trump side.
Well, we will leave it there. We've been talking with Governor Gary Johnson, a two-term governor of New Mexico, a two-time Libertarian Party presidential candidate. Governor, thanks so much for talking.
Nick, thanks.
For Reason, I'm Nick Gillespie.